not doing anything. We're broadcasting in live.
Oh, you are? Okay, great. Good afternoon, everybody. I want to welcome you to our LTD Board of Directors special meeting. We're going to do a quick roll call just to make sure everyone's here. We have Don Norden. Actually, I'll just read off names that I know of people who are here. So we have Don Norden, Caitlin Vargas, Stephen Yet, Emily Secord, Joshua Scove, and Kate Reed is, those are all here. And we have Kate Reed, who is absent today. I just had some quick comments. I think sometimes when we're doing these meetings, we've forgotten why we're doing it in the first place. So just as a reminder, we're doing it because the governor of Oregon had ordered that all public meetings take place virtually whenever possible. And so we're trying to honor that executive order as well as also do our part as public officials to try to help with the health crisis by limiting our exposure to each other and other people. So I want to thank everyone for their cooperation doing that. The other reason that we're here is because we, as a board, had decided that we wanted to make sure to stay on top of these developments. And we also want to and be able to make decisions based on up-to-date information. So really quick thanks to LTD staff for bringing us that information to be able to make those decisions. And also I want to thank, again, you know, cannot thank the staff enough for trying to keep everyone safe by cleaning the buses, taking temperatures, and all of that. That is a lot of work, and we really do appreciate it. Any comments from you, AJ, as general manager?
Oh, I'm not on mute. I was trying to unmute myself. I do not at this time. Thank you, Carl.
No problem. So next, Tom, I believe you're up for an update.
Okay. And I'm going to share screen here. There we go. Can everyone see that?
Yes, thank you.
I'm getting head nods. So to start with, I thought I'd start off with a graph that's not got any LTD data in it, but it's something that just came out. In fact, it may have been out a couple days ago, but I just started looking at it yesterday. This was a report that was prepared by the Imperial College, who you might recognize as the group that manages the ABBG group, as well as several other transit groups across the globe. And this is a graphic that shows, there's, as you know, anonymized data, but this is an example of an American transit system and the pattern that they experienced. And this is in terms of percentage of 2019 ridership. And so you can see it really follows a very similar pattern to ours. This shows a slow decline of 20 days as you'll see, we're constantly looking at ways to display the data in ways that gives us some more insights. What you'll see in our example is that this line is much steeper, closer to a week and a half. And then the stable demand is actually, and you'll see this in the next graph I show, has been very stable over the past 4 or 5 weeks. So just an example of what others are seeing in the country with respect to bus transit. So here's the graph you're used to looking at. And again, I would draw your attention to the lower left is the total boardings by day. The green bars, and we talked about this last week, but the green bars represent the new level of service that we started, a week and a half ago. And you can see, and it's slightly more service. Again, most of that was in the form of MX hours. But you can see a slight bump that represents people kind of responding to that. But otherwise, you know, when you look at kind of how things flow over time, relatively similar to the stable service we had with the orange bars. One thing to point out on the boardings after 8:30, you can see we haven't done the statistical analysis yet, but there is a noticeable bump in more rides, more boardings after 8:30, which again, with the in the context of MX hours being the primary source of the increase in service, people are just finding that more useful right now. But again, nothing really significant in terms of changes to our ridership levels. Here is some of the route load data that we've been showing. And so this is for all the routes that operate 40-foot buses. And, you know, this is for loads over 15. And you can see, well, the first pattern I'd show, and this will show up in the 60-foot as well. You can see the loads that we had back before we, before things happened that basically took away our normal market. And we had these loads here. And then, I mean, this is about the point where we started saying we need to manage that better. And you can see we've been able to manage that down. There are these spikes related to the new service. But again, as we've analyzed this, what we've seen is the vast majority of these trips that are overloads are coming from, first of all, our core service. And then within 3 to 4 blocks of the Eugene station where, you know, people are coming into town, they're getting off at stops near the station, or as a route is going out, the same thing, it's a bigger load and then people are getting off within a short distance. So this is what we're trying to do. Or that's what it looks like in terms of what we're trying to do with managing loads. Same kind of patterns with the 60-foot buses. Again, a lot of loads over 20 in normal operations, but we've been managing this down. And again, we're seeing the upticks here as we've added service. And so that's what that looks like. And again, we'll take some questions at the end of this, but here's the ride source information. These are the call volumes, fairly steady. I was asking today about what led to this, and we're looking into what led to a relatively low number relative to previous Mondays. So we'll have an answer next time for you on that. This is the number of trips, and very, very typical. This, we didn't have data that went to, this week, but very typical of what we've been seeing in terms of, you know, fairly similar levels of rides here during the week. And then obviously it goes down on the weekend. So, not a lot of new information there. One of the things, you've seen this graph before, in various stages. This shows the boardings, for a regular service by, by hours of service. So, this is the normal kind of what we used to see in terms of a very peaked service. And over time that gradually flattened out. And I think the significance of, and why we keep bringing this back to you, this all looks very much the same, but I think that's just another way of illustrating, the stability in our ridership, that we've seen. And, let's see. I think that's what I've got for that. It is, as you saw with the bar charts for boardings, this orange line here between the green one and the dark green one, was this last week with the increased service. So you could see a little bit more ridership throughout the day and tapering off. But otherwise, this is a good illustration of very stable ridership. One of the new things we wanted to show you, one of the things we were trying to look at is, and just to understand more about who's riding, where are people using the service. This, and I'll tell you, this is the version that we've got today, but we'll get this a little bit easier to read now. But here's what you're looking at. You're looking at average weekday boardings for every MX stop in our system. And what we did is we ordered it geographically. And so on the left-hand side, you're looking at the Commerce Station. And on the right-hand side, you're looking at the River Bend Station on the loop. And you can see, so, and we color-coded them in terms of whether they were heavily university related, and I think you can make out which colors represent the U of O. But you can see in normal times, and the normal times are the big chart or the big bars here, huge amount of boardings coming from just three of the four university stops. And at the same time, you've got a whole lot of boarding activity at the Commerce Station that actually is very equivalent to what we see at the Agate Station. And so this just gives you a sense of the level of ridership. And one of the reasons why the West Eugene MX ridership has been, I mean, you can clearly see why it's better or higher than the Gateway line, because the Gateway service here is on the right-hand side. So we thought that was kind of an interesting look, and you can see how in the blue bars and the dark green bars, how our ridership has declined during this period of time, but still where people are getting on and off, where the big activity areas are. A lot of them on the west side of town, so there's a lot of use of transit there. So going on, so this was going from basically eastbound from Commerce to Riverbend, and this one shows going the other direction. So you've got Riverbend on the left side here and kind of going the other way. So these are trips getting off in the westbound direction. And again, very clearly a lot of normal time ridership coming from the U of O. Starkly different under current conditions. But it's interesting to see very similar patterns over the course of the route, even though there's lower ridership. So the stations that get the activity now are similar to the ones that were getting a lot of activity before. And that's not surprising, I don't think. I mean, the sign of activity around a station relates to the activities that are there, whether it's residential densities or commercial activities or employment centers, those types of things. So that's that. I'm not going to go into this information unless there's questions, but this is the material that we've been bringing you in terms of comparing the top 10 boarding locations for regular service. And for example, and I in the memo in the materials, I provided quite a bit of text in terms of how to interpret this. But as we talked about last time, this station south side of Wagner, east of Cubitt, is currently got 66 boardings on an average weekday, and that's at the top of our top 10 list. Before, that station was getting 194, and you can see on the right-hand side, which is 2020, I'm sorry, this is mislabeled, but this is 2019 on the right side. It was at number five. And you had all these college and LCC related stops that were higher. And so that's the regular service. And there's the MX service, similar construction. I got the date right on that one. And so you can see how things have changed. Again, Commerce Station, what you saw on the last set of graphs kind of explains this, but still a very busy station. And where it was number three a year ago, it's number one now, but very strong. And you can see here on the 20, just looking at the 2019 rides, and I think Josh, this is something you had asked about last week. But here's the contrast for some of the university stations. So the Walnut Station used to average 762 boardings in 2019, only has 50. Dad's Gate had 704, now it's 21. And if it's not got coloring, that means it's not even in the top 10 anymore. So that's kind of an indication there. Again, the Commerce Station dropped a lot, but now this is the number one station. So, I mean, these are the patterns that kind of give you a sense of, I mean, obviously the university's not in session. That's a big part of what drives ridership on our system. And so with that gone, you're seeing kind of this new pattern. I wanted to talk a little bit. We've gotten some information from Peace Health Rides, corresponding with Lindsay Hayward today, and she sent me some updated information about bike share, and I just thought I'd touch on base on that a little bit. What you can see here is the it's the number of trips per day by payment plan, but it gives you the overall. So the length of the bars is an indication of the total ridership, and so they're getting in normal times they're getting about 900 rides a day, certain days of the week, and this very similar pattern to what we've seen in our ridership in terms of how that's gone down. This is another way to look at that, basically, in terms of number of trips per week on this graphic. But you see how it's gone down from what it was here just back not too long ago to what we're looking at now. I have to follow up with her. I didn't have a chance today as to why there has been somewhat of a slight uptick in bike share. Not sure if that's an intervention they did to make it work better for people or what, but we'll find out. And this is a graph. I'm going to talk to her about this. It's kind of hard to read, but it compares the frequency of use by time of day and between the current year here and last year. And, you know, there are different patterns. People are using it for different times of day. Anecdotally, she said that they were starting to see new users of the system in terms of how the system was being used. That's it. That's what I've got. Questions?
Thank you, Tom. Do we have questions for Tom or comments? Josh, go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, great job, Tom. Thank you. Super helpful. Just a quick note, I have also spoken with Lindsay. They have 100 fewer bikes in the system. They usually have 300. They're down to about 200 now, just in order to make maintenance easier and because volumes are down. So still some healthy ridership with those 200 bikes. I sent Tom a few questions before just so he'd know what I was going to ask ahead of time. Before I do those, Tom, I just have a couple of quick things. Is it easy for you to explain the distinction between urban and core? Did I miss that description in the memo that accompanied it? Just, you know, the labels that appear on some of the earlier graphs distinguishing different types of ridership.
Yeah, so here you go. Can you see that, or did I? Can you see this slide? Okay, let me just blow it up a little bit. So this is a definition of what constitutes, there you go. What constitutes connector, core, urban, college, and rural? Those are the
That's all of them. Those were not just examples. That's all.
Yeah,
that is literally.
That was
my bad.
Okay.
Okay, that's cool. That was the first one. So then the other quick ones. So there is some reopening currently planned, sort of processes for approving county by county reopening plan by the governor. I think maybe some of you are also on the call with yesterday with a bunch of our entire sort of Eugene Springfield area legislative folks and the governor's office yesterday. And they're moving toward having some sort of process for reopening. And I'm just curious, like, as we think about adding another 10 or 20% of ridership to the system, I mean, even just a modest increment, forget about getting all the way back to our previous levels, do we have any inclination about whether it'll be pretty evenly spread out across different routes and different times, or do we expect a big spike in those buses with more than 15 or more than 20 people on them?
So, and I'm going to share some time in this answer with Mark, I think. But to start with, as we anticipate things rolling out, again, you've pointed out, and I think folks are generally aware that the university is going to try and open up the campus in the fall, and that would be late September. Probably. And so we're setting up discussions, just so you know, with university staff. I'll be meeting with Dave Reeser and his team sometime in the next couple of weeks, just to go through kind of what we're thinking. In terms of how we would think about adding service back, we wouldn't bring the whole system back because the university is going into on-campus learning. Rather, we're going to look at everything else that's going on and figure out what's needed to serve the university in particular, but perhaps those corridors. So we're not thinking in terms of bringing just ramping up the whole system all at once. We're going to look more at specific markets and what we need to do to serve those. So that's the first piece of that. And then the second question you had with respect to what in effect becomes how are we going to manage loads, because as we've shown, in particular, the university really drives a lot of our productivity or our loads. And so how are we going to manage that? And I know that we're looking at doing a lot of things to protect the drivers and some other things. But Mark, do you want to answer that part of the question?
Yeah, I think until the university gets geared up completely, our ridership is not going to increase significantly. So, even if they start loosening up this summer some, I don't think it's going to drive ridership up to the point where we're going to have to add a whole lot of service. And there may be certain trips where we may have to, but overall, we just don't see it. So, until the university comes back and we can prepare for that and plan to add more service back at that time. But really for the summer, we don't really see it bouncing back.
Were there other questions? I've got one. Oh, go ahead, Josh, and we'll hit, then Caitlin, and then.
I'll just say really quickly, just so people know, the U of O's summer session is going to be entirely online. So any reopening will kind of be testing with non-U of O people. So we'll maybe get some more information from that, but I'll save my other question until we go around.
Thanks, Josh. Caitlin, go ahead.
I was just going to comment on the Peace Health Rides graph that I wasn't super surprised. I actually talked to Mike Coughlin today, who said Burley had a record month. There's just people also wanting to get out and use alternative forms of transportation where they're not near others. But my question was, for you, Tom, that first graph that you showed us, where you're saying that our trends are essentially confirmed or in alignment with others. Mm-hmm. Is there graphs or, yeah, okay, right there. Is there also one that is forecasting what the ridership trends look like? And is that something that we can take into consideration, seeing that this one looks so accurate as to what we've experienced?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We're starting to actively talk about what that would look like. I wouldn't say that there are, at this point, forecasts kind of specifically developed as post-COVID forecasts. There's a lot of systems that had forecasts of growing ridership over the years that are now needing to be reconsidered. But there is a lot of conversation about what is the market going to look like for transit as things start coming back. And, you know, things related to concerns about crowding on buses, I know has been an issue that's been discussed nationally. And so as well, people have talked about, and we're experiencing this at LTD in terms of how we've continued to operate, that, you know, a lot of people are figuring out how to work at home. And we think that's going to be kind of the big spike in the next kind of mode of commuting is going to be a significant bump in people working at home more. Not that they won't, it'll be 100%, but that you'll see some dampening of transit demand perhaps coming from that. And I'd ask AJ and Mark what they may have heard in their conversations with others.
Yeah, I think it's pretty consistent with what you said. You know, they don't anticipate that, you know, everybody's just going to go back to work, that companies are learning that they can save a lot of money in office space if people are working from home. And you know, but there's various levels of productivity and from different job markets, too. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But again, it's not going to be one of those things where ridership is just back to normal in the fall, even with the U of O.
And if I can add to that, I think because of the lessons learned about, like Mark is saying, the remote learning or the remote working, is that it's not going to be pre-COVID levels. And today I was reading something in one of the transit magazines that had just recently taken a survey that said that most riders were concerned about taking public transportation unless there were measures in place for physical distancing and mask wearing or face covering. So I think when we do begin to, ramp up some level of service beyond what we're doing today, that messaging is going to be important to communicate and educate the public about what measures we do have in place. So I think there's, besides us just changing the way we do business, there's also going to be the fear of being in confined spaces. So we think it's going to be down for a long time, which may be the best for public health.
Thank you for answering my question. I think that it's hard to know. We can't control things. And so just, it's really helpful to hear that you guys know these different situations that are going to affect ridership and you're keeping them in mind as we just, you know, prepare for the future. And so thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I totally agree with Caitlin on that one. Moving on to, I'm going to do a question and we'll go circle back around again. This can be for anyone. In your report, Tom, you said that there was some anecdotal evidence as to making some adjustments in our schedule. I was wondering, does that include talking with some of our essential employers or any employer really, just to see, are we meeting their needs?
Yeah, so that reference was to seeing businesses advertising for employees to basically do the stocking of shelves And we've seen that. That's in part, I think, what we're seeing in some of the bumps that we've seen in later and in the kind of stability of the late night after 8:30 service. But I haven't talked to individual businesses at this point yet. But
if possible, I would love for someone to talk with some of the essential industries out there, you know, like grocery, health fields, et cetera, to see if we really are meeting their needs. And of course, with riders whenever possible. And it doesn't have to be formal. I think an informal kind of ask would be totally fine.
Great.
Next, we have Emily. Did you have any questions, or Don, before we loop back to Josh? Great. Josh, go ahead. You do it, and I'll ask us another question, Raph.
Great. Thank you. I'm sure you'll hear this when you talk to Dave, Reese, or Tom, but just, so everyone knows, UofO is going to be in person, but with lots of changes. So no classes. I mean, the current plan is no classes of over 50 people, no in-person classes. There are existing classes that are in-person are going to be encouraged to do some online elements, substituting for some of the in-person meetings. And then, staff and faculty are able to petition for exceptions. Like if they view themselves as meeting CDC guidelines for being in vulnerable groups, they may try to work from home in fall. So the patterns of sort of transportation need will definitely be different. I don't know how predictable they'll be, but certainly different. The other question that I had sent Tom, I just want to put out there for people. I'm curious if we know anything more. Tom, you kind of hinted at this qualitatively in your memo. Anything more about the people who are still taking the bus? I mean, the composition of ridership is pretty important as we think about shifting our service model at all. I'm curious if we can even do, and I don't know if this quite works, but something like the analysis that we did for Transit Tomorrow. I mean, I think everyone's going to remember looking at all residents, people of color, people experiencing poverty, seniors, 65 and over, and just looking at how changes in service changed the availability of transit of different frequencies for segments of the population. I don't know if that's quite the right model, but even just something like that, so we can feel like we're doing our due diligence about whom we're actually reaching with our transit service. I mean, I know we have to decrease it, and that's going to make sense, but knowing the implications would be great. And then just to piggyback on what Caitlin just said, I'm hoping next time we can have some more discussions about different modes. I mean, like whether that's bikes, e-bikes, e-scooters, whatever. So we should talk about other modes that maybe have some distancing built in. But I'll leave it just as that foreshadowing for now and stick with the question.
Okay. So two things related to the question. One is, again, as we start thinking about how we're going to be putting service back, it really is with consideration of the strength of, and you could call it, you know, if the regional transit market is one big market, there are a lot of sub markets. The UofO is just the biggest example of a distinct market. And some of the markets are geographic in nature, as you might imagine. But I mean, that's the approach we're taking, is to look at, what do we know about the ridership? And I'll tell you, just so folks recall what Josh is talking about, you know, those bar graphs that were, what they were showing, just, they weren't showing the actual ridership. They were showing the transit access from, within a certain distance from the frequent service network that had been established, and comparing that to the existing network. And so, but those kinds of the underlying data that goes into that gives us a demographic profile for again, what I'm characterizing as these sub-markets. And so I believe last week it was when I was talking about the stop at Cubitt and Barger, and that area, I mean, not exclusive, but that area that within the kind of catchment of the route serving that serving Barger and people that would connect there does have demographic elements related to low income and minority, for example. And so we can get at it that way as we think about, you know, what's going on. And as we start watching employment come back, you know, that's another demographic that we're looking at. What's the density of employment on certain routes, and where are we going to want to be bringing back service? I don't want to convey this as being, precisely granular in how we're going to deploy things, but we're looking at those are the factors that would go into us talking about how we roll things back. And in that context, to the extent that Transit Tomorrow was about the system, we're not talking about a system at this point. We're still in those, you know, there may be several periods where we're incrementally adding service to meet certain needs that are coming, coming up. That eventually we're going to be at a place where we have a system in more kind of the, whatever the next normal looks like.
Is everyone frozen or is it just me?
Must be you.
I think it's just you.
Carl looks frozen. Well, Carl comes back. Oh, there you're back, Carl. Actually, let me say really fast, Tom, if you could post those slides, the ones that you showed tonight that are not in the, a couple of them were in our packet, but some of them weren't. If you could post those, would be great. Thanks.
Yeah, we can do that.
Oh, and Steve, I didn't mean to leave you out. Did you have any questions for anyone before I end it?
I'm good, but thank you very much.
You're welcome. Tom, really quick question. Did Lindsay happen to mention whether there were any cleaning protocols for the bike shares?
You know, we didn't get into that level of detail, but I am going to follow up with her tomorrow and just tell her how the board discussion went tonight.
Yeah.
And I'll ask her that question.
Great. Well, please pass on that. We appreciate her continuing the effort to keep that system going.
Sure.
Great. I think with that, we lost Don because he had to go to another meeting. So I'm going to go ahead and adjourn our meeting. So thank you very much, board. Thank you for the public for joining us today. And I hope everyone keeps healthy and safe. And we will see you all next week. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.